The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. Live from Lionel Richie's Dancing on the Ceiling party on the hull of the starship Byzantium, it's Doctor Who Podshock.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it
now.
Whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Louis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you? And who are you?
Celebrating 25 glorious years of time and space, the Gallifreyan Embassy presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 198. Hello, everyone. This is Louis Trapani, and this is Doctor Who Podshock. And what follows is our live review show of episode 5, is it, of the new series of Doctor Who, series 31, or series 1 of Matt Smith. It's the continuation of last week's story, The Time of the Angels. This is Flesh and Stone. So if you have not seen Flesh and Stone yet, I advise you to don't blink and just take this podcast and put it where you can't see its eyes and listen to it when you have seen the episode. And speaking of our live review shows, we've been doing this every Sunday as we normally do, the day after transmission on BBC One. And we do it at 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time using TalkShoe. You can find out more information about it on our website, thegallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net. Both will bring you to the same place. And we'll have information there posted there, if not right now, when you're listening, very soon. In the next couple of weeks, our show is going to be doing some timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly type of things, and time-shifting. We're going to have to push our show up to 4:30, as we did with the 11th hour, because that was a holiday. And unbeknownst to me, when I originally announced our next week's show during our live show, I did not know, did not occur to me, no one on the show made mention that next Sunday is Mother's Day in the U.S. here. And it's playing havoc with the recording schedule. So therefore, it's being pushed up to 4:30, possibly even 4, but most likely 4:30. Check our site before joining in on the live show, just to be sure. But most likely 4:30 p.m. instead of 5. And it's only going to be, the shows are always scheduled for an hour, but many times we let it run so we can have everyone included that's in the queue, so they have a chance to talk. But we're going to have to limit it. We're going to be strict and limiting it to 1 hour. So get in the queue early. And as always, Podshock supporting subscribers will be bumped up in the queue. So you do have an advantage there if you're supporting our show. And to become a Podshock supporting subscriber, you can go to our website, thegallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net. And on the top there's going to be a banner there that you can click to become a Podshock supporting subscriber. You'll be supporting the show and, more importantly, helping us continue doing the show. This show that you're listening to right now would not be possible if not for our supporters, and we can continue doing Doctor Who Podshock and hopefully grow upon it as well. Someday! So in addition to next week being Mother's Day in the U.S. and having to shift our show to accommodate the holiday, we are going to be doing it again the following week. The same scenario applies. We're probably going to be starting the show at 4:30 p.m. as opposed to 5 and limiting it to only an hour because of that Sunday is a Who York event with Sylvester McCoy on that same date. So in order for and we're going to have to be arriving late to that event because there's unless we have a TARDIS to take us there, and we can't really push the show up any earlier than it is, so be it. So the next couple of weeks, we're doing some time shifting with the show, and then after that, hopefully we'll go back to our regular schedule. In fact, there's going to be probably a Sunday in June that the show may shift to a later time slot as well. So, you know what? I know that the time isn't good for everyone, but no matter what time we schedule the show for, it's an international show. It's not going to be good for some people. It's no avoiding that, you know, and it's just a fact of life when we're dealing with a global community and an international audience. Let's go to our live show. And as always, oh, I already told you about the spoilers, so you know, there'll be spoilers here. So if you have not seen Flesh and Stone, be warned and save the show until you have. So let's go to our live show. And joining me on the live show is, on a rare occasion, we have all three Doctor Who Podshock hosts. We have myself, Ken Deep, for the most part. He sort of, I don't know, disappeared somewhere in the middle of the show. And James Norton, who unfortunately had to depart as well in the midst of the show. And as always, we had Dave A.C. Cooper filling in as well as guest host.
I'm about to do something incredibly stupid and dangerous when I do.
Jump!
What happened?
The artificial gravity. One good jump and up we fell.
The statues, they look more like angels now.
What's through there?
Secondary flight deck.
Okay, so we've basically run up the inside of a chimney, yeah? So what if the gravity fails?
I thought about that.
And?
And we'll all plunge to our death, see? I thought about it.
Ah, the security protocols are still alive. There's no way to override them. It's impossible.
How impossible?
2 minutes.
The hull is breached and their power's failing. Clarings, keep watching them.
And don't look at their eyes. Anywhere else, not the eyes.
Dr. Song, I've lost good clerics today. You trust this man?
I absolutely trust him.
I'm taking your word.
Amy, when the lights go down, the wheel should release. Spin it clockwise 4 turns.
10.
No, 4. 4 turns.
Yeah, 4. I heard you.
Ready!
Magnetize the door. Nothing could turn that wheel now.
Yeah?
Dear God.
Ah, now you're getting it.
We need another way out of here.
What's through there? What do they need?
They need to breathe.
It's a forest.
It's an oxygen factory.
And if we're lucky, an escape route.
Trees plus technology.
Branches become cables, become sensors on the hull, a forest. Sucking in starlight, breathing out air. Even rains. There's a whole mini-climate. This vault is an eco-pod running right through the heart of the ship.
A forest in a bottle and a spaceship in a maze. Have I impressed you yet, Amy Pond?
Excuse me? Hello, Doctor. Angel Bob here, sir.
Chat, here's what I want to know. What have you done to Amy?
There's something in her eye.
What's in her eye?
We are.
What's he talking about? Doctor, I'm five. I mean, five.
You're counting.
There's more power on this ship than you yet understand.
That's like the crack from my bedroom wall when I was a little girl.
Yeah.
Parts of space and time that should never have touched.
Amy, what's wrong?
Poor. How did you get past them?
Found a crack in the wall and told him it was the end of the universe.
What was it?
The end of the universe. Let's have a look then.
So what's wrong with me?
Nothing. You're fine.
Everything. You're dying.
Doctor!
She stared at the angel. She looked into the eyes of an angel for too long.
Sir, angel incoming!
Keep visual contact. Do not let it move.
We stare at them to stop them getting closer. We don't even blink. And that is exactly what they want, because as long as our eyes are open, they can climb inside. There's an angel in her mind.
Three.
We've got to shut down the vision centers of her brain. We've got to pull the plug. Starve the angel. Amy, close your eyes.
No. No, I don't want to.
Good, because that's not you. That's the angel inside you. It's afraid. Do it. Close your eyes.
She's normalizing.
This is Doctor Who Podshock Live, and this is Louis Trapani, and joining me is the full cast and crew ensemble of Doctor Who Podshock here, Mr. Ken Deep.
Hello.
Hey, Ken, how are you?
Well.
Well, okay, good. And Mr. James Deep, James Deep, I just married the two. Mr. James Norton from across the pond.
Ken would make a wonderful husband.
I would have such a handsome husband.
Well, I didn't. You were engaged in a manner of speaking, I was assuming.
Yeah, well,
indeed.
Engaged in.
So I take it, James, best, you were not freed from what was it? The what was it called again? The prison. The
oh, the storm cage.
The storm cage. Okay.
Yes, well, by Lewis, James and I are in the bird cage, apparently.
It would seem so.
That's another podcast. Well, and
Lewis would know.
I would know. So it's sort of like we got two in the U.S. and two in the U.K. And so rubbing elbows with James is Mr. Dave A.C. Cooper.
Hi, everyone. Out of the star cage into the marriage cage, eh, James? Well, they did say, the doctor did say, are you married or something? Well.
Yeah, that's what I said.
More or less.
Engaged in a manner of speaking.
I'm very happy for you.
So we're all here gathered today to not to witness the marriage of Ken and James, but rather to witness the review of the part two of following the Time of Angels, Flesh and Stone. So it's interesting, you know, that here we are once again with part two and of a story, and it's titled on its own, the naming convention that started sort of in 2005 with World War III, and it continues on that we're, you know, with end of time, we had part one and part two, so, but we're not still doing that, which is sort of, I don't know, this story, like many, you know, continuations, really needs the first one, doesn't really stand on its own, so I don't know if it really matters at all, but anyone that plucks this out of the hat would have to know that, you know, you would have to see the first one. So with that said,
a second part of it needs a first part. You're messing with my mind here, Lewis.
Well, it's the gravity of the situation. So obviously, this picks up where we left off. I think it just continues the momentum that we had in the Time of Angels. I think together, you know, because now that both are out, we can kind of review the story as a whole and as along with this episode specifically as well. But I think it's an outstanding story. Right up front, I'm just going to give it 5 out of 5 because last week was 5 out of 5. This week's 5 out of 5. And obviously the whole story, I would give it maybe 1 out of 5. No, of course, the whole story is 5 out of 5. Again, some echoes there. The continuation of echoes that I'm seeing of Aliens, the movie Aliens, are continued there, even down to the scanners that where they were tracking the movements of the angels. Again, nods. I didn't really see it so much as a ripoff, but more of a nod to Aliens in a sense, you know, especially with the military and them in the bridge of the starship where they're all coming in on all sides. And actually, that has a bit, that reminded me a bit of Earthshock too, with the Cybermen trying to break into the bridge of that starship in that story. So it's similar but different. Wonderful little dialogue in this story. I think that continues here, you know, with Bishop questioning Riversong about whether or not, you know, the doctor is some sort of madman. Do you trust him, or is he some sort of madman? He just keeps saying, I absolutely trust him. It doesn't, you know, answer to the madman question. Just stuff like that is, it just hits all the notes. Wonderful dialogue. The way the doctor's banter with Angel Bob, again, I think that was, I think Matt Smith is really spot on as the doctor. It's incredible that this is his first story out, and I think he really, again, hits all the notes. Again, with the dialogue saying, when he sees the crack, he says, oh, this is extremely not good, and just little touches like that, or never let me talk while he, you know, he escapes when the angel's just holding his jacket, whatever. Good stuff. Production-wise, again, just as we saw in last episode, that same level of production continues. Interesting movements of the camera during Amy's scenes when she's feeling ill, or when she's closing her eyes and laying down and preventing the angel from within from coming out. By the way, this goes without say, I should have said it in the top, that if you haven't seen this story, spoilers are abound. So stop listening and wait until you have seen this story before you hear this episode of Doctor Who Podshock. Lots of good stuff to say about this episode, and not much bad, really. Bishop's death scene, an excellent, speaking of dialogue, excellent piece of dialogue there. The epilogue in this story with Amy's advances on the doctors seems a bit natural, not forced. It seemed, after what she's been through with the doctor, it just seemed like it was a natural thing, and it wasn't sort of a whole... It happened in episode 5. It wasn't like we had to endure 5 episodes of her pining for the Doctor or anything like that. And this wasn't anything... It just seemed like it was she was interested in having some fun and not a long-time commitment thing. So I think it worked well. Amy's counting down earlier. Again, I think that worked very well. Again, excellent dialogue, the way that the words, the numbers, you know, fitted in, similar to, you know, I feel 5, you know, instead of fine, how they just, the dialogue was written to kind of fit in with the numbers. The Doctor's age, jumping back to the end scene again, we're still with the age, we're still using the aging system that was developed in 2005, I guess, because I think it was Time of the Rani, which, by the way, should have a warning sticker on it not to watch it alone or not without alcohol or something. But anyway, I think that establishes the Doctor's age as 952 or something like that, so... That hasn't, we're still going with the whole 900 thing from, I think, going back to the Aliens of London. I think that was when the Doctor said he was 900 years old. Anyway, what did everyone else think? I think I put everyone to sleep.
Ken, you go first. Good fellow.
I give it 5 out of 5. It's a home run. Last episode was great. This is one of those cases where the second episode isn't a letdown. So from that point of view, really, I've heard quite a few people say that this episode will compete for one of the greatest episodes of all time. I think that's a bit strong, but if you're taking it from the point of view of it can make the case, yes, it can absolutely make the case. I really enjoyed it. I just enjoyed it. It was fun. It was good old-fashioned Doctor Who with base under siege and character interplay and group of... playing against expectations. They're not soldiers, they're monks or whatever we were calling them. And the death scene with the bishop was absolutely fantastic, probably one of my favorite scenes in Doctor Who history. It's everything that's great about Doctor Who wrapped up into one. It's everything that's great about Stephen Moffat rolled into one. The play with the Doctor and the Doctor saying, I wish I would have had a chance to know you better, and Bishop saying back to him, I think you're seeing me at my best.
Ken, I just realized something. Another parallel with Aliens. They both have a character named Bishop, and they both have that death scene.
the Bishop thing I picked up on last week. But the character names in general, you had... Angelo, which is Angel, and on. You had symbolism in all the names being used in the episode. Granted, we were all looking for information on River Song and trying to find out a little bit more about what was going on. They presented the angels. What works well in a sequel is when you take something that's already established and you flip it around. And so what you had was Don't Blink in the original one. In this one, you had Amy not opening her eyes. They flip it around. They reverse the threat. The same when comparing Alien and Aliens, going from one alien to multiple aliens. Well, the same thing. You had a smaller band of angels now up against this wave of angels. And there were nods, of course, to Aliens at the base under siege story. But you also had nods to 2001 with the gravity and the hallway going the opposite direction. I like Moffat's use of smart sci-fi concepts, as opposed to, I say it over and over again, the witchcraft and the soothsayers and the potions. And Stephen Moffat is maybe setting us up for wiping out the last 5 seasons by simply with this rift in time saying, oh, no one can seem to remember anything. And and it's almost like a subtle jab saying, I'm the new producer. Forget what you thought for the last couple of years. So
I kind of like the explanation, you know, because I always said, you know, after the two doctors, the next doctor story where you had the giant cyber... cyber leader, cyber king, dancing around London, and no one seems to remember, and that addresses it.
Absolutely. If he could have only slipped in a thing about the half-human thing in the 96 movie, I would have considered this a 6 out of 5.
There's still the rest of the series to go. So,
yes, well, we almost had Russell taking care of it in End of Time, so this would have been a an absolute home run. Quickly, while I have everybody's attention, and because this is going out this week, a quick reminder that some of our friends of Podshock, Sylvester McCoy, Daphne Ashbrook, and E.G. So are all going to be in Seattle this Thursday, May 6, 2010, with the launch party for the Sci-Fi Sea Cruise, and they're doing the tour of all the locations from the 96 movie. So that's coming up Thursday evening, May 6, 2010. If you're in the Seattle, Washington area, here on the West Coast, I wish I was on the West Coast of the United States today. If you're on the West Coast of the United States, so that's something to keep your eyes out for coming up this week. That's pretty nifty. Especially if you are a fan of the 96 movie as I am, I'm a bit envious that they'll be romping around. So anyway, 5 out of 5. It's an excellent episode. It rivals some of the greatest things we've seen. It's a very worthwhile sequel to Blink. And Lewis, you said it by saying that Matt Smith just nailed it, and you said that to him when you saw him.
Well, you said it. You used the expression "nailed," and I just been stealing the nailing phrase from you.
And you hit the hammer on the nail. Yeah. Well, he did. He does. He nailed it. He's the doctor, and it's very enjoyable, and you can't take your eyes off him. I mean, he's just the doctor, and I'm really enjoying his performance. And even episodes that I don't. So far this season, the ones that I didn't think were home runs, he's still the best part of the episode.
What sort of reminded me when Ken and I met Matt Smith, he was very personable, and he really, he came right up to us and engaged us and got close to our, one's personal space, and he was very intimate in that respect. And I noticed here when he was interacting with Amy, when Amy was counting down and he was trying to figure out what's going on with Amy, and you can see him looking at her and you can see his eyes pivoting back and forth, and he's like right into Amy's face, and it's very unique to this doctor. I mean, the other mannerisms that he has that are sort of reminds me of past doctors, but his intimacy, this sort of is somewhat unique to him, how he kind of he kind of bonds very close to, and some people have said that, well, they miss some of the relationship that Rose and the doctor had, whatever. But I think this is still very strong here, what he has with Amy, and I think it's very clever, and it's witty, and it's charming. It's the way he just calls our pond sometimes, and Amelia, and just
a lot of people will really thrown off by that end scene, though, in the bedroom. I think you, much like Churchill calling the doctor at the end of The Beast Below, this is clearly a setup for the next episode. And until you see the next one, don't start criticizing, oh, I can't believe that Amy would just throw herself at that or whatever. First off, there's a possibility that not everything is as it seems.
Yeah,
and until
you've
seen the whole thing, it won't become clear.
Yeah.
And the same thing goes with this crack. And what I'm liking is that information about this rift, this crack, is coming out early. They're not just stalling it and teasing us to the end of the season, and then all is revealed to be a potion of some kind. There's actual relevant information to it here in the fifth episode of the season. That's, again, things that give me confidence that Moffat's on the right page here.
And just going back to Amy, and I mean, the doctor said it right there in that scene, that everything's centered around her and at this time and all that. So, obviously she plays a big factor in this whole crack and, rift in time and space. So
keep calling it crack, and it just seems like a funny word to be using.
Amy's crack.
There's also a suggestion that we may see River Song at the end of the season, being that she said, "I'll see you soon." If there was, if they were teasing us for next season, she might not have said soon. So I take that to believe that we may see her in the finale of this season.
The only thing is that when she says, I'll see you soon, does that, it's soon in her timeline or soon in his timeline?
Well, indeed. She mentions the Pandorical, which is this thing that we're leading up to, so.
Yes, the Prisoner Zero mentioned as well in the first
What if she's Prisoner
episode.
Zero?
Well, this has been something that has been alluded to, the fact that, you know, she was a prisoner and was in this storm cage and so on. Maybe she continues, she turns into Prisoner Zero at the end, who knows?
Or is imprisoned in the same place as Prisoner Zero, and that's how he knows the information. I had tweeted this week, and that in itself should be news, because I do that seldom and never, much to Lewis' chagrin. But I had said that maybe she's a time agent, like Jack, and that this book that she's carrying isn't her diary, but a dossier on the Doctor. She says she has images from all his incarnations. And so we know there's more to her than meets the eye. She comes across as this James Bond-like character early in the story. So there's much to be discovered here. And great. It's not all up front. It's fun again. I haven't had this much fun in a few years with Doctor Who. And I haven't had this much fun watching television in a really long time.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
This is a testimony that good television still can be made.
Yes.
I
haven't really looked forward to watching the next episode as much as I have this season. It's been a while. I can honestly say it's probably been since Tennant's first season where I couldn't wait for next week.
Yeah. No, I'll echo that. And the production values of these past few episodes have been particularly good. I mean, it's been good the whole sort of season from start to finish so far, but this particular duet of episodes has been very, very good, and I've been very impressed with what they've done. I mean, people have taken it to task a little bit in terms of, oh, they didn't show them floating upwards with the gravity globe when he shot it and so on. But that didn't bother me at all. I understand that they have to,
Well, that would ruin the surprise that they showed him floating up there. I think that was the whole point, was that the camera pulls out and you realize where they are.
Where they are, and it adds that whole extra element to it. And that shows.
Yeah.
I mean, Doctor Who hasn't always been about high production costs, and it's about using your imagination, and it's about being creative with the budget that you have, and that was very creative. And the things that they did, I mean, I love the bit where the angels moved when Amy was in the forest.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize until I saw The Confidential last week that those were actual girls dressed up.
Actresses, yes.
They're actresses most of the time. I mean, they do have a few statues that they've sculpted, but most of the people are
in makeup.
In makeup, exactly. And I think that's incredible because it looks so convincing and it's absolutely so very well done.
If you caught part of The Confidential for this week, that you'll see some of them in the forest and they're wearing sweaters, and because they're in an actual forest there. So the cast actual, during rehearsals, that you see the angels wearing sweaters and stuff to keep warm. So it's interesting seeing stone. They look like stone statues, but they're wearing sweaters.
I've really enjoyed The Confidentials this year as well, and particularly this one, because they brought some of the writers on. It was great to see Paul Cornell
there.
Paul Robertson.
I mean, it's just great to see the writers getting involved. In particular, that some of those writers aren't involved in this season. So here they are stepping up and offering testimonials, and I think that's great. Let's see more Paul Cornell.
Yeah, they also.
And also hint.
I was just going to say they did the whole thing with Stephen Moffat's stories. You know, they went back and did a retrospective of his work on Doctor Who.
Yeah, that was great to see. But part of that also is some marketing. In that, as an example, I've turned two friends on at work to Doctor Who that have never watched it before, and they started with the 11th Hour, and they watched part one, with Time of the Angels, and I said, well, you have to see Blink. And so now I've got them watching Blink. And now after seeing David Tennant in Hamlet this week, they're like, oh, that's the guy from Hamlet. And on and on and on it goes. And suddenly now you've turned two people into Doctor Who fans. And the depth is there instantaneously. And the appreciation that you can do great television still and not involve a hidden camera and a bunch of people in a house yelling at each other.
Or yes.
A stupid cooking show or something.
Mm. But it shows because they've really invested in this series. They do in every series of Doctor Who, but this time particularly in class actors. I mean, Alex Kingston as River Song is brilliant, but Ian Glen as Octavian was terrific.
And his voice, he has such an authoritative voice. It just seems so fitting.
Yeah. He really felt like the soldiery sort of, you know, gentleman soldier type.
Yeah.
And I love casting. David Atkins with Bob. Bob has a brilliant voice as well. And just was perfect.
I love, even though he was speaking for the angels, he was still speaking with respect, you know, with all due respect and this.
Yeah.
He still had that mannerism.
Excuse me, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think angels really wanted you to know, sir. Yeah. Really, really good from start to finish. I think I would be very surprised if anybody, any Doctor Who fan, could rate this below a 4.5.
Well, one of our correspondents, none other than our West Coast correspondent, Joshua Lou Friedman, did not like part one. I'm curious to see about part two.
Yes,
and I'll have to let him speak for himself on an upcoming podcast.
He said he's going to be joining us next Sunday, so we'll get to hear
his
from
him. Points were very valid. And he had, he made an interesting case for not flipping the angels around and changing some of the established things. So, but I know he felt very strongly about Blink. So that'll be very interesting to hear. If not, again, maybe not next week on a live show, but on a future studio show where we have him aboard. That's something I would definitely like to hear, to expand on his critique of this episode. Mostly because I think the consensus has been that it's been brilliant.
I think this,
yes,
as someone said before, I don't know if it was Ken or James, that this has to be one of the, you know, pinnacle episodes of Doctor Who or stories. You know, just it's just it's so lovely on different levels.
It's going to be remembered for a long time.
For no other reason than it's just fun.
Yeah.
That you can watch television and be moved and excited and frightened and laugh and all the things you want, all wrapped up into one, and into something that's not insulting your intelligence, and that's nice and refreshing.
Yes.
It feels good.
Yeah.
The episode has an amazing visual look. The writing is crisp, so the dialogue works for you. It sounds amazing, and it just feels like fun. It feels like real television to me.
And it has a rewatch value as well, even though, you know, it's sometimes with horror, you know, genres, that edge is taken off because you know what's going to happen, but it's still fun to watch even on the second viewing.
I've watched the first part 10 times already.
Oh, my.
And
I don't know where you have the time.
Second one now I've seen 3 times in 24 hours.
I just barely got to watch it the second time right before this show. All right. So, Dave, you've been very quiet.
I'm glad to hear what you guys say. I think you'll find it might not be unanimous, the agreement that it was up to the highest of standards of Stephen Moffat. But I mean, the writing was very clever, there's no doubt about it. But I do feel as though Stephen Moffat's having to make slight concessions to, you know, the shortened 42 minutes, although you could make an argument that actually this second part ended at about 35 minutes because they had like these two little tag sections at the end, the one on the beach and the one back at Amy's house. And they're still doing for me this thing that I don't like where they're having to sort of accommodate where the adverts are going to be because there seems to be an awful lot of duplication in the dialogue, but I did think it was very clever. My reservations may go away because it improved on the second watching. I don't mean it was bad, but I think it was down on episode one because I felt as though the some of the lore that we've come to believe about the angels was sort of altered to fit the story because, of course, you've got all these angels in one area. We know from Blink that they're not allowed to, they're not supposed to see each other, and one of the reasons when they freeze of covering their eyes, it's not because they're frightened of us humans, they cover their eyes, it's so they won't accidentally see another angel. Because once they do that, they will be forever locked, quantum locked, or whatever the thing is. And that seemed to get a little bit loose with it. I understood in the part one about them killing the people, because the doctor said, you know, they needed perhaps they needed bodies. Perhaps the first two were no good, and then with Bob, they used his larynx or whatever it was to communicate. But since they had that with Bishop Octavian, they didn't need his body, so why didn't they, you know, send him back in time? Well, one of the arguments, of course, is that there's this sudden gigantic crack opened, and any little bits, and I'll let Darth explain what his theory is about that, but, I mean, basically, they couldn't be bothered with humans because there was this great big feeding frenzy. Of course, when they get towards the crack, they suddenly disappear because they suddenly realise instead of them devouring it, it could devour them. One little thing, and I'm going to say it on this show because it looks like Randa Thor isn't on microphone, so I think he will forgive me, but he spotted it first, and I was talking on the Rat Project show last night, that when we see the Doctor having the quiet moment with Amy, and then the Doctor and River Song and the Bishop move away from her, suddenly there's a close-up on Amy's hands, and the Doctor's grasping her hands and talking to her.
Yeah.
Well, the Doctor's just got away from the angels, but they pull his jacket off him. The jacket's back near the crack with the angels. And you see the Doctor in the forest without his jacket. But in that very tight close-up, you can just see the shoulder of the Doctor, and he's wearing a jacket.
I know. I didn't catch that.
Right. Well, we don't think that's...
It's certainly part of Mike continuity,
I don't think. We don't, because he's talking. He says something strange to Amy. He says about Amelia, do you remember what I said to you, Amelia? And we think that Doctor there, talking to her, is from a different timeline.
Absolutely.
He's in a different timeline.
That's not the Doctor. The Doctor is with Riversong and the Bishop. This is the Doctor come back to talk, to clarify something that Amy said. And I think when we talked on the last Podshock, and I was talking with Darth, and we said, the bit about where we thought Amelia was waiting for the TARDIS, and she heard the TARDIS, and then it looked as though it was actually Amy in bed dreaming, and she came down to the Doctor. I think that the Doctor will revisit the young Amelia because he's trying to find out why she's the key to the crack. And the other thing is, when he's talking to her earlier on about the eye, he says three times there, you know, Amy, 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 why is the what's in Amelia's eye? He doesn't say, Amy, Amy, what's in Amy's eye? He says... So I think there's some time-shifting element.
I think he uses Amelia's name, you know, as a... It's sort of like how parents sometimes... talk to their child and use their middle names sometimes just to get their attention, or I think that's all that's about. And
but did you not think that the Doctor had left her and then suddenly the Doctor's there? He was with two other people.
But he was just still within walking distance. It wasn't like he left her, you know, 5 minutes ago. He was still pretty much in that area.
But it was a very tight close-up. I don't think he was supposed to sit down. Anyway, that's just a theory.
It was just a goof, that's all.
I agree with you 100%, and I disagree with Lewis. I think you're absolutely right on it.
Woohoo!
And I will also add this to you, for you, Dave, to explain the angels' difference. Remember, if the thread of time is coming unwoven, the angels could be acting in ways they're not supposed to be acting, the way that we're not remembering Cyber Kings. And keep in mind, to confirm your point about this timeline thing, that you're dealing with Stephen Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey Moffat.
Who loves
playing with this stuff and has waited his entire life to tell the story in this way.
Right. I mean, I love the idea that when, like, on the bit, I mean, we might be jumping ahead here, but on the beach scene where, you know, she's still worried about the angel being inside her, but of course they're not inside her because they've been taken out of existence. Basically, the angels have met their own nemesis in a way, because what they do to people on a one-off basis has been done to them. Certainly that grouping. But anyway, I know you've got a really full room there. I don't know whether you want to play another clip, but there we go.
We're going to see some more of what we saw, what fans have spotted in the 11th hour, you know, going back to Rory's badge saying 1990, and the whole fact that that time seems a bit out of sync. And, you know, so what you're saying, Dave, is definitely a possibility. And,
yeah,
you know, we just don't know. I know when we saw Stephen Moffat at the Apple Soho store, when this was addressed to him, he sort of just dismissed it. But he might have just been saying what he said just to avoid spoiling the rest of the series, because the whole crack, it's a crack in time and space. So. You know, these inconsistencies in that we're seeing could be very deliberate.
And yeah, it's not a question of watching part two before you judge part one. It's almost as though we're going to have to watch the whole series. I mean, poor old Ken will have to have a marathon when the series ends. He'll have to watch all 13 in a row.
In some kind of strange order, I'm sure.
But getting to that scene that, Dave, you're mentioning, I have to say it's a lovely scene, regardless whether it's a continuity error or it's the Doctor in another timeline, it's still a lovely scene. It was shot, you know, right from Amy's hands, and it was lovely dialogue. And this is, you know, Amy says, well, you don't always tell me the truth, and that's why I need you to trust me. And it's well written, it's well acted. Yeah. It's just a lovely scene.
And as I say, it was Mike Vandathor who pointed it out to me, and we speculated from that.
Well, we've seen it before with the tie, you know, going back to was it Smith and Jones when the Doctor first sees what's her face again, and I'm talking about the 10th Doctor.
Martha.
No, it wasn't with Martha. Was it with Martha? Anyway, but we see that he changed ties or whatever at the end. It was all thing playing with time.
Yeah, it's with Martha. Yeah,
yeah.
She's walking down the street and he comes up to her, shows a tie.
Yeah.
And later we find out
so
that's
it was
his
Smith
explanation,
and Jones then, right?
Yeah,
brain is a terrible thing. We'll play another clip and we'll open it up to the floor, so to speak. Anyone that wants to call in, feel free to call in. We are going to take Podshock supporting subscribers first, so they'll be bumped up in the queue. And if you'd like to call in during our live show, the number is 724-444-7444, and our call ID is 23358. So feel free to call in. Again, the number, I'll do it slowly now, 724-444-7444. So many fours.
Ten.
Oh, no, now Dave is counting down.
So can I open my eyes now?
Amy, if you open your eyes now for more than a second, you will die.
River, you and me, we're going to go and find the primary flight deck, which is a quarter of a mile straight ahead, and from there we're going to stabilise the wreckage, stop the angels and cure Amy.
How?
I'll do a thing.
What thing?
I don't know, it's a thing in progress. Respect the thing. Moving out.
Amy, later. River, going to need your computer.
Amy... You need to start trusting me. It's never been more important.
But you don't always tell me the truth.
Remember what I told you when you were 7?
What did you tell me?
No. That's not the point. You have to remember.
Remember what? Doctor? Doctor?
Dr. Song's in my personal custody. I released her from the Storm Cage containment facility 4 days ago.
What is that?
The date of the explosion, where the crack begins.
And for those of us who can't read the base code of the universe.
Amy's time.
This has got to be a service hatch or something.
Hurry up and open it. Time's running out.
What? What did you say? Time's running out? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I just meant...
Well, I know what you meant. Hush.
But what if it could?
What if what could?
Time. What if time could run out?
Got it.
Marco, the angels have gone.
It's like they're running. It's like, I don't know, a curtain of energy sort of shifting.
And you think it scared the angels?
What could scare those things?
What are you doing?
Point me at the light.
You can't open your eyes.
I can't open them for more than a second.
Mom, you can't.
I need to see it. It's the same shape. It's the crack in my wall.
Close your eyes, now.
You want me to get a closer look at that?
Hang on, what about the other two? Before you sent Pedro, you sent Crispin and Philip, and now you can't even remember them.
Who's Pedro?
We have to move it. The angels could be here any second.
Oh, never mind the angels. There's worse here than angels.
I beg to differ, sir.
Let him go.
Well, it can't let me go, sir. Can it not while you're looking at it?
Can't stop looking at it. It'll kill you.
Sir, there's nothing you can do.
You're dead if I leave you.
Yes. You can't trust her.
Trust who?
River Song. You think you know her, but you don't. You don't understand who or what she is. She killed a man. A good man. You don't want to know, sir. You really don't.
You'll die. I wish I'd known you better.
I think, sir, you know me at my best.
Ready?
Content.
Thank you once again, Dave, for assembling these montage of clips here. Great job, as always.
As always.
Yes.
Thank you.
And the mystery of River Song continues there, as we heard in that clip, which is great. You know, I just hope they don't reveal too much all at once. I sort of like this whole mystery continuing a bit further. And I don't think they will. I think that's the whole point of her character is being out of sync with each other as far as when they meet up and all that just adds to it all. So I think it's lovely. I really like her so much more now. I mean, not that I disliked her in when we first met her in The Forest of the Dead and Library. Silence in the Library. It's just that I think she's just more engaged. Maybe just the relationship with him, with her and the 11th Doctor. And just, well, they were able to develop her character better now. I think it's all good stuff. And that Bishop scene, you know, with Octavian's death, I think the first time I viewed it, I don't think I noticed because after that scene, the Doctor leaves, you know, him to his death, and he crawls into the ship, whatever, the hatch, the car, whatever, the airlock, and you hear the crunching of his neck, you know, of them breaking his neck. And I didn't catch that the first time. The second viewing, I heard that very distinctly. All right, well, let's go to our queue here. We have lots of people waiting in the queue. So of those, let's see, I think the first one that's a Podshock supporting subscriber is our correspondent in Germany, Mr. Graham. I should say Mr. Sheridan, but Graham Sheridan, a.k.a. the Second Doctor.
Hello and good evening. Well, it's here anyway.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, good night. There's a whole day gone by. Sort of like saying my dad. To James's point there, I'll go straight off the bat. I mentioned this also in Coldham. The Bishop, Octavian. Now, I spent 13 and a half years in the British Army, and reminded me of and he just reminded me of so many officers that I've known through my time in the Army itself, and he's so like so many of my actual commanding officers I've actually had, you know, for the boys there, but more like sort of the cavalry officers that I've known. They were more for their troops than for themselves. So I thought that was brilliant, and the actor did an absolutely brilliant portrayal there for that. There's a couple of things I forgot to mention on the cult then, which I thought was good. Now, there's what I call the trousers moments in Doctor Who.
Oh, my.
And Yeah, you'll get what I mean in a second. The first trousers moment was back in the Mind Robber. It's not so much trousers as cat suit, where Zoe's clinging to the bum moment.
You got my attention.
Right, see, Dave. So, and then the second time for me was Nyssa in who's climbing up a rock face in Castrovalva. And this time round, it was River Song in those in the desert battle fatigues. So it's like that was my third trousers moment, as I call it, sort of me having my eye on the opposite sex there.
What, not Perry in a swimsuit.
Perry in the swimsuit is just damn obvious, but The other two moments are not so what. Well, okay, Zoe's bum is very obvious. Maybe not Nyssa in Castrovalva. Ian mentioned to stay, and he's right as well. That's Ian, the sixth Doctor, me being the second Doctor. Amy tripped up. She's a real companion now. She's actually tripped up and fell over, so she's a real companion now at that. Because it's a tradition from the classic series, if you notice. Mm-hmm. And another point is, it's like after-show discussions, I call them as well. The Doctor, and the way that Stephen Moffat's writing his scripts, it's become very highly quotable. It's things that are just sort of sticking in my mind, sayings all over the place. Yeah. And little things he does as well. You know, like the Dalek episode, he says, yeah, it's a jammy dodger. So, I was promised tea and stuff like that. I mean, there's like tons of... I've got to watch it more than the twice I've watched it already.
There's lots of one-liners in here. They're just all... I mean, I think the 11th Doctor has so many of them as well.
Well, exactly. There'll be a T-shirt production line there just to us each of the week, sort of quotes of the week. I think that was brilliant there. Now, other things I did mention, though, at Colton was I loved the scene right at the beginning there where they're stood on the hull of the Byzantium after the Doctor shot the gravity globe so that they get covered in the liquid so they can get enough lift so they can jump up and get themselves caught in the gravity field of the Byzantium. And when they're stood on the hull, it did remind me very much of Star Trek First Contact when they're outside on the hull, upside down, quite literally upside down on the hull of the ship. You know, and there's sort of like a circular bit as well that they're concentrating on. And so that was pretty good as well. Things like detail, looking into Amy's eye, and you can see the reflection of the angel actually in Amy's eye. It's little details like that I like going looking for. Unfortunately, I haven't had that much chance to go and really look for the details in this. But things that have been picked up on later in Amy's bedroom. There's a picture up on her wall that looks quite a lot like Billy Piper, we noticed towards the end of Cultdom. And I went back and had a look at the HD version, and yeah, it does very look much like Billy Piper. But there's also a picture of a woman in a dress who looks very much like Madame de Pompadour as well, but it's been drawn. That's other sort of like details. I need a bit of time to come up with the other details in that. Well, going back to last week,
hope it's not Rose. Rose has come back one too many times.
Just a bit. But going back, like last week's episode, details like, I don't know whether anybody noticed, but in the container that Amy was in as she got locked in with the image on the screen of the angels, there was the suits that you see in Forest of the Dead. Science in the library were in the background just hanging up, which I love looking for the details. I really, this season so far has provided me with so much rewatch value because I'm just looking for details all over the place. I'm trying to notice the little details in that just to get as much out of it. Unfortunately, I've only had a chance to watch this twice so far. I've watched last week's episode 5 times already. First watching the program, well, watching the episode twice. The actual watching of it, so the watching value, and the other three times is looking for the details. I like the idea that every time the clerics went out towards the crack as it went through the forest, that the cleric that was left behind looking after Amy had forgotten about his counterparts as they were erased from time.
Yeah, because they never existed.
Never existed, which also made me think about the point that if we see when we see the Doctor in his next jacket, we'll know it'll be a different jacket because that one will be erased from time as well, and whatever contents were in his pockets. I don't know whether you noticed in the previous episode that very second Dr. Light, he was playing with at the beginning of Time of Angels. This is details, is what I mean by details. I noticed he was playing around with a magnifying glass, the second Doctor's magnifying glass, in his hand. As he was talking to River as well, in that episode, which seemed to quickly disappear, but there wasn't any sort of bad links there, which seems to be sort of much noticed complaint. I'm starting to sort of formulate a theory on that this is going to be part of the whole series run here, that time is not playing in sequence, and this might be deliberate mistakes that have been made. Mention of the Cyber King, that it'd been forgotten. From the next Doctor episode, I thought that was a pretty good thing, because the Doctor's now working out the bits are sort of slotting into place in his mind's eye.
Well, I thought it never made sense that that the Cyber King could be causing such devastation on London, and it's not in recorded history at all. So I just like the way they kind of address that gaping hole that was made in that story,
because then it made sort of total sense that this was actually starting to make total sense to the Doctor at last. Now, the other things was the potential, because I was looking at other hints within the first couple of episodes as to Amy was getting married, as she ran off with the Doctor in the first place, and everybody automatically thinks it's Rory, and from the sort of preamble for next week's episode that we saw at the end, get the idea that no longer that we think it might be Rory, but in fact it is Rory that she's getting married to.
Well, she revealed that at the end of this episode.
Yes, exactly. And it's just sort of the hints, the may not seem too obvious, but myself and Tim Drury, we're getting sort of this idea, is River in some weird and wonderful, well, not so wonderful way, but actually the Doctor's murder.
Well, that's what's implied here. That's the whole implication here, is that she killed a man, a good man, and and Bishop didn't when the Doctor was interrogating Bishop at the end, and he said, you don't want to know, and I reveal too much, so it's all implied there.
Yeah. I mean, there's other thoughts like things from Sixth Doctor's time. Like we've had this idea that in between the 12th and the 13th regeneration, there's some sort of bad Doctor, and it might be him. But it's all speculation. We'll just have to wait and see.
As the Doctor said here, time can be rewritten, so you never know. And that was also in last episode as well, where Amy says, "Oh well, you have to go on because you have further adventures with River Song," and then he says, "No, that's not necessarily the case." Mm. So, as Yoda would say, the future's always in motion. So, how many TARDIS groans would you give it, Graham?
Not quite finished yet. On a couple of other points, and I'll give you the TARDIS groans for this and for last week's as well, and overall. The communicator that the Doctor managed to use to communicate as a, if you hear the sonic screwdriver's noise, it's like a compass for the blind sort of idea, follow the sonic screwdriver sound to communicator. I like that idea. Mm-hmm. I also like the Doctor's little rage moments throughout the series so far, very Fifth Doctor like sort of thing. So he's picking out like really good bits of each of the Doctors, and then Matt's incorporated into his own specific Doctor, and there are specific things that he does been in no other Doctor. I think it's absolutely brilliant. The only thing, let's see, there's another bit. I like the transporting effects, the sort of the smoky effect, instead of being sort of like a Star Trek-y sort of lasery effect, a very sort of smoke ghost-like way that the transporters work, or the transporting beam works. I thought that was brilliant. I love those effects. I didn't like the way that Amy's flirting with the Doctor, trying to sort of get him into bed, sort of seemed to be, after all that they've gone through so far, that seemed to be totally out of character, came out of left field. Didn't really see where that was coming from at point, apart from when somebody mentioned that quite rightly, that when Rory's in the 11th hour says to her, "Aren't you going to turn your back?" as the Doctor's getting changed, and she says, "Nope." I think that's just
the
nature of who she is. She, you know, she does work as a kissogram, and we knew this was coming as well, because we saw in the original Coming Attractions, the trailers, that there was a scene where she lays one on the doctor, and initially I thought, well, before we saw the 11th hour, I just assumed maybe it was from the 11th hour where she mistakenly, you know, rumors were coming out that she was working as a kissogram, and maybe she thinks the doctor's a client or something like that, but I think we're seeing more and more of Amy. She's someone that's been around the block, obviously, and wasn't like this whole longing for the doctor for the past four episodes, which I liked. Story was very intense, where the doctor's actually verbally handholding her, and there was that scene that we were just talking about where she places his hand on hers, whatever. But in a sense, in a more non-literal sense, the doctor's hand holding her through this forest, through the comlink, through the communicator, guiding her and all that. And this attachment is growing there, and she just wants to, and she's known the doctor since childhood, made dolls or whatever of him, and. It to me just seemed like it seemed natural. It didn't seem forced. I just didn't see it coming, me personally. But otherwise, that's my only real, possibly my only really major negative point to this episode. Doctor's reaction to it is still absolutely brilliant. He's very, very Doctor-like, a bit second Doctor-like in the way he reacted to it all. Because to me, it appeared to me that he didn't see Amy as this grown-up woman. He still got the Amelia in front of his eyes. That's the way it came across to me, the way that that he sort of sees her. That's the way that sort of, for me, that he sees her. But otherwise, that's basically it. Now, for this episode, 4.9 out of 5 TARDIS groans. Just that little bit is that Amy sort of coming out left field bit. Previous episode, I gave a 5 straight off. I did that over the GAE, over the embassy website. And overall, I mean, you can basically overall say give it a 5. I really did enjoy it, and I wasn't expecting to, so that was brilliant. Well done to Stephen Moffat. And it's nice to be on the same show with Ken and James for a change, because usually when I'm here, they're not. They've been avoiding you.
we haven't just scheduling. It's great to hear your view, mate. Thank you for contributing.
I'm sorry, Graham. As we've heard, James is spoken for now.
Oh, well, so is life, and such is life. And I'll make the space now for the next one.
Thanks for blogging and for supporting and participating.
My pleasure. When I see something early enough, I'll get it up there. Unfortunately, I'm sorry I couldn't do anything with it. I don't know if you actually managed to get to see it. There was an advert for the Green Party in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, I saw it. Before it was pulled.
YouTube.
And now I'm marrying Yahoo and YouTube together.
Google
will be very displeased with me.
I thought YouTube was some sort of Chinese version of YouTube, based in Hong Kong. But it was a fantastic little advert for the Green Party. Basically, to give it a describe it for the people out there, it was a basically the screen was divided up into four squares. In three of the squares, there were multicolored Daleks, so one for each of the main political parties in the United Kingdom. Yeah, yellow for the Liberal Democrats, red for Labour, and blue for the Conservatives. In the other square, there was a little green bunny. A little rabbit. And in the background, there was the Sesame Street song, One of These Things Is Not Like the Others, playing. And towards the end of the episode, or the end of this advert, laser beams comes out of this bunny's eyes and just blasts all blasts all the Daleks to bits. Unfortunately, because of certain Terry Nation type restrictions on that, it's got pulled rather quickly. But hey-ho, never mind. It was fun whilst it lasted.
Well, if you want to catch Graham's blog, it's on our site, thegallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net, and Graham posts there regularly. So thank you once again, Graham.
Not a problem.
All right. Well, we're going to move along.
I'll catch you later.
So thanks again, and cheers.
Bye for now.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Let's see. Now, I believe next, as far as in our queue, who's a relatively new Podshock supporting subscriber, is none other than our mystery presenter here. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Grant, it's your mystery caller.
Yes, and thank you for your support.
just signed up yesterday. Just with the episode, one thing I liked was the ending where the doctor turned off the gravity of the ship and let the planet's gravity pull the ancients back into the time vortex. I thought that was quite good, like, where you're solving the problem and stopping the angel.
It was a neat solution, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people were... you're talking about the beginning of the episode, how they got through the cliffhanger?
No, so
the end of the episode. Okay. Well, towards the...
Where he used gravity and...
The gravity failed, yeah. And they all grasp onto things.
Yeah. Also, I was planning interesting with the trees on the ship used to produce oxygen. I thought it was a clever idea of reproducing oxygen for the crew.
Yeah, an oxygen factory.
Yeah. The other thing, I wonder what's going to happen to the three members of the team that went through the vortex. Will we see them again?
The ones that have been wiped out? The ones that don't exist anymore?
Yeah.
Well, we don't know how this is all going to end in the series finale, whether or not if the timelines are going to be restored or not. We may they may all, you know, in like a scene from Close Encounters, they may all come back on or be restored at the end of it all.
Yeah.
Oh no, the year that never happened again. Oh no.
Or maybe the alternatives, they end up in a different time. Like the doctor meet them somewhere else.
Yeah, well, so far they've been like ancillary characters that have vanished. That it hasn't been sort of like the Prime Minister or anything like that, so.
Yeah. No.
We don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Actually, I wanted to see if Moffat is using this, like, time cracks to resolve maybe earlier things from the 2 days to, like, change them into more logical.
He's trying to expunge Russell T. Davies from the whole Doctor Who thing.
Or maybe correct some, you know, clean up a little bit there, you know, with the Cyber King and all that, maybe that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So
I wonder if we get a totally different series for number 6 with more changes, like...
Yeah, you're talking about next series? Well... It could be. Well, let's just concentrate on on this series.
Yeah, that's Yeah.
Instead of let's waiting for this series to end before we start speculating on the next series.
Yeah.
Didn't somebody ask him that when you were in New York, Lewis?
Yes, someone did ask him that. I wonder who. All quiet on the New York end here. Yeah, I think we lost Ken. All right, so how many TARDIS groans would you give this story, or this episode, or this story as a whole?
I think I'll give it 5 TARDIS moans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you so much, again, and thanks for your support as well.
Yeah,
cheers, mate. Thanks so much.
Yeah. See you.
Okay, cheers.
Bye.
Well, with that, we're going to stop the live show here and continue it in our next episode of Doctor Who Podshock, number 199, coming up after this one. Yes, once again, our live show ran extra long. We went in well into overtime just to get everyone in the queue a chance to speak, and we're breaking it up in two, so stay tuned for Doctor Who Podshock 199 for further discussions of Doctor Who Flesh and Stone. And remember, we'll be recording again this Sunday at a different time. We're recording at least a half hour early at 4:30, and it's going to be restricted to 1 hour only. So You got to get in the queue early, and if you're a Podchuck supporting subscriber, please make it known that you are. We don't already know who you are, because some people use aliases and funny names. So, well, not necessarily funny, but different names than their real names. So when they sign up on TalkShoe, so sometimes it's we just need to identify who you are. And if you are a Doctor Who Podchuck supporting subscriber, we'll bump you up in the queue, and you'll have a chance, and more likely have a chance to get on the show than if you are not. It's just one of the ways we show our appreciation for your support. And as I mentioned in the top of the show, you can learn how to become a Podchuck supporting subscriber by going to our website, thegallifreyanembassy.org or podchuck.net. And on the top there, there'll be a banner, a graphic little banner there that you can click to become a Podchuck supporting subscriber. For a low monthly subscription fee as a show support, not only will you be helping us continue and grow the show, but you'll get extra content as well. If you are already a Podchuck supporting subscriber, thank you for your continued support. We can't do this without you. I also want to take a moment to wish Jeff Smith well. He is a resident of the Nashville area there that has been flooded. Such horrible devastation there with the floods and all that, and hasn't really been getting the coverage and the news that it deserves. And I know Jeff has been tweeting some images and what's going on there, and they finally had the power restored earlier this week. So our thoughts and support go with Jeff, and we wish him well. Jeff, as you may or may not know, is responsible for the Doctor Who Podchuck theme music, as well as our promo. And also, as always, please feel free to visit our website, thegallifreyanembassy.org and podchuck.net. Both will bring you to the same site. We have stories, blogs, a very active community there in our forums, so there's further discussions on Flesh and Stone, as well as other Doctor Who related discussions, plus the many spin-offs such as Torchwood and K-9 and other sci-fi as well. Gallifreyanembassy.org or podchuck.net. You can also follow Doctor Who Podchuck on Twitter at twitter.com/podchuck. You can follow Ken Deep on Twitter. He did tweet this week. No wonder, cracks in time and space. Ken tweeted. Well, he tweets now and then. You can follow him on twitter.com/KenDeep. You can follow James on Twitter at twitter.com/JamesNorton. And you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/LouisTrapani. That's Louis. So with that, we'll see you next time. Cheers, everyone. You have been listening to Doctor Who Podchuck, presented by the fan-run GallifreyanEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podchuck is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podchuck. You can email us at feedback@podchuck.net. Doctor Who Podchuck theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible in part by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
I'll do a thing.
What thing?
I don't know. It's a thing in progress. Respect the thing. Moving out.